I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
KFI AM 640. You're listening to the John Cobell Podcast on the iHeartRadio app. Moist line is 877-MOIST-86. You better call and get on for Friday, 877-MOIST-86. And in a few minutes, the Wall Street Journal has another exclusive inside Boeing's factory. It's even worse than you thought, even worse than previously reported. It's fascinating, really. This is really a bad company. They really have a bad manufacturing system.
How can it be worse, John?
Well, you'll see. It's coming up later in the hour. I've read this story several times, and I'm still not sure exactly. Well, I understand the story, but it's the lecture that this story profiles. UCLA Medical School, they had an event that they scheduled with Professor Dr. Helena Hansen. And the title of it is Beyond Magic Bullets, Whiteness as a Structural Driver of the Opioid Crisis. I should say that again. Whiteness as a Structural Driver of the Opioid Crisis. This is the lecture to the medical students. It was going to be April 4th in person. You could watch on Zoom. The particulars have now changed. I guess there's been some backlash. We're going to find out. Let's talk with Caroline Downey, who wrote a piece for National Review that was published today. Caroline, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Explain what this lecture is supposed to be about, or was supposed to be about.
Well, like you mentioned, it was hosted as one of the clinical adjacent teaching seminars available to residents, professors, faculty at the school, doctors, pharmacists, technically any of those kind of medical professionals could attend. And the idea is to bring in these speakers, such as this Dr. Helena Hansen, to offer new information about the industry. And, you know, usually it's patients and their problems, and it's case studies and the treatment that might be given as a result of their particular circumstances.
What?
Usually it's that kind of informative session.
What does skin color have to do with the opioid crisis?
Well, right. So in this case, they went full radical politicized, bringing racial identity politics into medicine. And it's like blaming the African-American community for the crack crisis. That would be the equivalent. It's just so blatantly racist to have a lecture with this topic and this title, but I reported that once they had any scrutiny, they completely buckled under pressure and they flipped the topic. They changed it to in-person only, so there's no Zoom access, probably because they had a feeling some people would be infiltrating and try to get some hot mic moments from this lecturer, because no doubt it would be extremely radical. It would be extremely politicized and ideological. But this is how many prestigious medical schools in America have devolved. They've devolved into ideological institutions. I mean, there's other medical schools that are far more higher ranked than UCLA that are now dabbling into, you know, not dabbling, they're embracing gender medicine, endorsing the idea that children, you know, as young as 7 years old or 10 years old can undergo life-altering invasive interventions and surgeries. I mean, but this is being wholeheartedly, institutionalized.
In American medical schools, they're promoting the idea that 7 to 10 year olds can have a surgery already.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's hard. There's so many medical schools
to change their gender.
Yes. What this audience needs to know is that America's highest ranking medical schools are involved in this pushing of ideas. Absolutely. They are. And they've been hijacked. Same thing with DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. That is a permanent fixture of academia largely. And medical school is not immune from that. And, you know, but instead of sending sociologists or kind of pointless degree holders into society with bachelor's degrees, you know, in undergrad, these are our nation's doctors. This is the future generation of practitioners.
I don't want to go to that doctor. I'd be terrified to go to a doctor who had these kind of views. But on the whiteness thing, do we know, does this professor, because she's written a book on this topic, is she blaming white people for inventing the opioid crisis, or white people being the primary users of opioids?
Well, so the problem was the flyer was super ambiguous, and I was unable to get into this lecture myself because they blocked it off from Zoom. Now you have to physically attend, so I'm hoping I can get somebody to figure out what this lecture is going to be about. But I did look into this professor's past literature, and she has books that are related to use the term whiteness in the context of the opioid crisis, as if to attribute that kind of epidemic to just being white. So, you know, it's extremely inflammatory. I have no doubt that, you know, her views are probably held by other faculty at the college. She used to teach at New York University, NYU. Also a very radical, captured university. So, you know, but this is what has become of America's, you know, top grad schools.
Some of these professors that are pushing this are older. Did they always have these views? Because a lot of this stuff, and I read about this every day like you do, a lot of the stuff I never heard of until the last couple of years. And then I look at, you know, Professor Hansen in this case, and I can't give you how old she is, but, you know, she didn't graduate college yesterday. She must at least be in her 40s. I mean, has this been being taught for decades under the surface and most people didn't know?
I definitely think the roots go back many years. There were certainly subtle, like the subtle springs of what we would now call DEI and all of its different perturbations. But I think the confluence of crazy events around 2020, the racial justice riots, that massive overhaul of essentially American norms because of this like massive racial question that America was obsessed with for first a summer and then a year later, I think that restructured many parts of American society. And it also created a brand new business. A business model that is, if we can identify racism in everything and then create basically endless conversations around that, there's academics who are going to make money off of providing remedies to that so-called racism that they are finding in locations that, you know, they're inventing it out of thin air. That's why we have DEI consultancies. That's why we have doctors like Helena Hansen, who apparently focus on the intersection between race and medicine, even though that should absolutely, that should not exist. That makes no sense. It's not, has nothing to do with the welfare.
Medicine should just treat sick human beings. And the color right. doesn't matter at all.
But I think there's a lot of money in this new area.
There must be.
And we've seen, you know, we've seen that all over the place. So that's, I think that's why it kind of accelerated and reached a feverish pitch in 2020 and then so on. And now it's, you know, fully embedded into, you know, academia, and there's entire departments dedicated to DEI. So it stands to reason that, you know, they're going to find it in medicine. They're going to find ways to implement it in everything, you know, I mean, corporate training, whatever it is, you know, K through 12, you know, preschool, they're going to find ways to embed it. It's kind of like a cancer.
And nobody pushes back at these universities. Absolutely no one.
I think the students, they face retaliation if they object to these sorts of things. And I mean, they're just, think about how hard it is to get into medical school, to actually gain admission. To object as a student is to make yourself effectively like a leper, because there's no way that all the students are going to rally together, even though they should. They're just trying to get the degree. They're trying to get residency. They're trying to have their work pay off so they can finally become doctors. So I think a lot of them, they probably are like, what the heck is this? But they probably just, they do what they got to do. And no one's putting up much of a collective fight. And I mean, there are whistleblowers who expose these kinds of things, and I've been in touch with many of them. But I mean, they face ostracization by their field, and because you would be amazed by how many actually peddle this kind of thing.
All right, Caroline, thank you for coming on. Good stuff. Thank you for your time. Caroline Downey, writing for the National Review about UCLA lecture, Whiteness as a Structural Driver of the Opioid Crisis. When we come back, what's it like on the Boeing 737 production factory line? Well, the headlines have words like confusion, disarray, missed procedures. That's not what you want to hear about a company that manufactures airplanes that fly in the sky.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
You know, news comes pouring at you all day. And often the way it's covered is you get a headline, you know, all that door plug blew off the plane, right? And you never find out, because I always want to know, well, exactly how did that happen? Like when they built the plane or when they maintained the plane, what was going on in the factory that day on the production line? What were people saying to each other? What was the moment that something was missed and they forgot to put the bolts in and the door went flying out? We don't have the final answer, but we're getting there. And over a series of weeks now, the Wall Street Journal and their writers, Andrew Tangle and Sharon Turlip, are putting out great stuff. I mean, they must be talking to everybody on the production line. And I think you've got all these employees whose frustrations have built up for years. And they're telling Tangle and Turlip all kinds of stuff. So we're going to put you on the assembly line and in Renton, Washington, at the Boeing plant where the plane rolled off with the bolts missing from the door plug. All right. On September 1st, they noticed that rivets were damaged on the fuselage. And the rivets are like fasteners. They hold things in place. The fuselage had come from their supplier factory in Wichita, Kansas, Spirit AeroSystems. So Spirit AeroSystems assembled the fuselage and they sent it to Renton, Washington for Boeing to do the rest of the work. Then the plane rolls out of the Renton factory and eventually you fly on it. Well, bad rivets coming from Wichita. They had to fix them. And they had a hard time fixing them doing it properly and doing it on time. And it got a lot of employees frustrated. And everything is documented. Everything is written down. And situations are given, are put on special tiers to give them priority. This was a tier three priority. This is supposed to get high level attention at the factory. This was the employees trying to finish the jet because it was so far behind schedule. There was an internal message that was created called tier change from two to three with $4 signs, meaning we're losing a lot of money here. Let's fix this. This was on September 17th. The Wall Street Journal says the factory was in disarray. Crews were unable to keep to the schedule, didn't follow procedures. Production pressure mounted as the delays piled up, according to entries in something called the Shipside Action Tracker. This is called SAT, not the exam. This is people write on this internal channel to say, hey, what the hell is going on? And some people are writing, hey, this plane's really late. It's costing us money. Someone else is writing, hey, we got to hurry up. Someone else is saying, well, we can't hurry up. This is not assembled right. Oh, we got rivet problems, right? They're all arguing with each other. But the pressure was always primarily coming from get the plane off the production line. Workers extended the estimated time for completing work 50 times. 50 times the damaged rivets were supposed to be repaired by a deadline. 50 times they missed the deadline. The rivets, in this case, were specifically around the frame of the door plug. Now, if you have 50 complaints about 50, the delays ranged anywhere from a half hour to days. So after 50 complaints, the work was finally signed off on, officially completed on September 20th, and a final quality check was requested. But I guess the final quality check either wasn't done or they didn't look at the door plugs. You know, and so now you have all these investigations going on. And a Boeing spokesman said the company is prohibited by federal rules from discussing the investigation. They still haven't talked to the supervisor. He's on medical leave. He's been on medical leave since the day this happened. He basically went into hiding, and I'm sure he's getting paid. And so the guy who might be most responsible for signing off on this thing, nobody can talk to.
And I think guess we need to put him on a plane that has missing parts or no screws or whatever and see how he would like it.
You've got a mean streak.
I
in
do.
You.
Yeah. Because that
you're an eye for an eye, girl.
I know.
Here, we're putting you on the plane, Mr. Production Manager.
I mean, you're sitting there. You don't care about the flying public.
And forget the
bolts.
And now
you're in hiding.
We're not even putting a door plug on this one, okay?
We're
good
not even
luck.
Put a door.
No seatbelt. Grab onto something.
We're going to have an AI pilot.
But you know what? It was daily chaos and a lot of pressure. And, you know, when bosses are screaming, keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving, at some point you either lose your focus or you give up and say, all right, what the hell? Let's see what happens on this one. Deborah Mark Live. Oh, we got Steve Gregory coming up. Steve Gregory. Oh, you probably heard about this. Remember in 2022, that 15-year-old girl who was killed by the San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputies? Her father had taken police on a chase, and they just, you know, they really, nobody could tell whether she was willfully going along with the father or she was kidnapped. And she came out of the car, started running towards the cops. Was she surrendering? Well, the sheriff's deputy shot her to death, and there's now a video showing her getting hit by the deputies. Steve Gregory's on the case. That's next.
More Than a Movie is back with season two of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carla Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
the
podcast would have taken a left turn. Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Michael Rappaport, and my wife, Kibi Rappaport, starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Steve Gregory is here with us because we have another chapter in a story that started in September of 2022, San Bernardino County on Interstate 15 in Hesperia. You may remember the 15-year-old girl that was running at police. She and her father had led the police on a chase, and eventually she was running towards them. They thought she was dangerous and shot her to death, and never have we really gotten the full story on this.
Yeah.
And I do have to say, before Steve starts, Steve won 9 Golden Mics over the weekend. 9 of them for all his various reporting and specials and
thank you
podcast work. And
yeah.
9.
I also need to, Jacob Gonzalez is my producer. Nick Pagliocchini was a producer. And Bart Avery helped me in Hawaii.
I don't think there's another radio news team like you guys anywhere in the country that I'm aware of.
Well, we certainly did well. And, yeah. You know, Deborah got best newscast and Amy King got best specialty show for her morning show. So we did yeah. very well this year.
Best news department.
Yeah. Thank you.
Best news department in the country. All right. Let's get to this story. Because I remembered this story as soon as I saw this
yeah, I covered video. It. We yeah, did I remember, debriefed on the show.
But
yeah.
I, you know, I'd forgotten about it. These stories just disappear and then...
I know. And the thing is, when these kinds of cases happen, and especially ones where, like, you know, now the attorney general is looking at it because that new law that passed a year ago where someone that's unarmed is killed by law enforcement automatically elevates or escalates to the attorney general's office, and the state will investigate it also. So it is also in the hands of the AG's office.
Could you set up like how she and the dad ended up getting chased?
Well, that's what I was going to say. As you might recall, we're going back to September 26th of 2022. The Fontana Police Department had reported that Anthony Graziano had shot his wife to death and kidnapped their 15-year-old daughter. There was an Amber Alert had been issued for a 2017 Nissan Frontier on the next day, on the 27th. Well, on the 28th, a clerk at a High Desert convenience store called 911 when he recognized Savannah. Savannah happened to be buying snacks. Deputies quickly got to the scene. They found the pickup near the junction of highways 395 and 58 near Barstow, and then a car chase started. And in fact, I remember speeds of 100 miles an hour or so. The chase went along Highway 58. Then it went southbound on the 15 through Victorville and right into the Hesperia area. And that's when the truck got cornered by helicopters and CHP and San Bernardino County Sheriff's deputies. At that point, there was a shootout. And what was released today, or actually it was released yesterday afternoon, was audio tape from one of the deputies' audio recorders on his uniform. It wasn't a body cam. It was an audio recorder. And that's still standard practice in some departments. and some of the radio chatter from the helicopter and from the actual scene when they were communicating back and forth. And then in this video that was released, there's also a narrative by a member of the sheriff's department. So what I want to play first is this cut B, Eric. And this is the helicopter. You can hear a pilot in the helicopter talking and trying to coordinate all the stuff on the ground, because by now, Graziano is now shooting at deputies, and deputies are shooting back. So now a full-blown shootout is in effect. And this is just a small clip.
Take your cover. Put out that shots are being fired. Set. Shots are fired. Shots are fired. Continue to shoot at the deputy. Girls out. Girls out. All right, girls out, guys. You know, Judy, hands out. She's out on the passenger side. Does anyone else have eyes in the vehicle to see if we have any other passengers in the vehicle?
Oh, no. Now, two things you hear on there. You say she's getting out of the passenger side. She's getting out of the passenger side. So what's happening simultaneously on the ground is a deputy is screaming for her to come toward him. And then did you hear the pilot at the end go, oh, no. He realized she'd been shot and went down.
Right.
So at this point, the next audio I want to play, it's actually cut A. And this is the audio recording on the deputy's uniform. And you can hear him really trying to get her to come right toward him.
Passenger, get out! Passenger, get out! Get out! Get out! Get out! Passenger, get out! Get out! Come here! Come here! Come here! Come here! Hey! 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 Come here! Come to me! Come to me!
She wasn't okay. You hear him say she's okay. I think he's meaning she's okay, like she's not the target. But you can hear
him. And she was running towards him.
And
he was encouraging her to run towards him. So who did the shooting?
So here's where the confusion starts to play in. And from what we can tell now is that he was not connected via radio to everybody else. So when you hear him communicating, you're only hearing him shouting out, just shouting. Mm-hmm. It's not on the radio. And that's why we hear it, is because it's on his personal recording device.
So they don't know why she's running towards him.
So it's not clear to anyone else why she's running. There had been some reports early on that case, if you might recall, that she might have been complicit or at least a willing participant.
Yeah, I remember that she was dressed in tactical gear,
right.
They said.
And now, when you look at the video, she's got like large, loose clothing on her.
Yeah.
And there had been a suggestion that she was a willing participant, even at 15 years old. So I think there was some confusion. I mean, I don't want to speculate on it. It's not my job. But based on everything we're seeing, it looks as though there was some major confusion on who was the target and who wasn't the target.
Were they shooting at her dad at that point?
Yes, they were.
All those gunshots you're hearing while he's yelling at her to come to him. All the gunshots, that's the exchange between dad and the other deputies.
Yeah, so that the dad is still shooting at deputies.
Uh-huh.
So, but here's the thing that I suppose will come out in the investigation is whether deputies intended to hit her or whether she was simply caught in the crossfire.
Right.
And that's the thing I think is going to have to come out in the investigation, both on the state and local level.
Yeah, I mean, he was trying to get her to safety, though.
Yeah, that one deputy kind of realized what was happening.
He didn't think she was a danger.
Apparently not.
Either somebody else did, or this was just caught in the crossfire.
Yeah.
Because dad was firing away.
Yeah, and I mean, it's the whole thing is there's nothing good at this story. I mean, there's no upset to any of this.
What's happened to the deputy since? Has any of them been put on leave?
By policy, everyone involved in a case like this goes on administrative leave until the investigation is complete. The current status of the deputies, I'm not clear on.
All right. Well, then there's more to come.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Fascinating audio there. Steve Gregory, KFI News. 9 golden mics he won over the weekend. Another golden mic winner here.
I don't have 9.
Huh? I don't have anything.
I know.
We've never been worthy. We only get listeners and bring in revenue.
Yeah, that's That's it.
The radio industry doesn't understand us.
No, I think you're very deserving.
Well, thank you.
You're listening to John Cobalt on demand from KFI AM 640.
Conway's coming in a few minutes. Did you see that LeBron James is pissed off about squatters in his neighborhood?
Wouldn't you be?
He paid $37 million for a mansion in Beverly Hills 2 years ago and then tore it down. And he's building his new dream home. It's in the neighborhood of Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez. But two doors from his property, squatters have taken over a home and they're throwing cocaine orgies. The neighbors, other neighbors were upset, got in touch with LeBron James's house manager. Maybe they thought LeBron could get something done. And this particular home that's been squatted on is four bedrooms, six bathrooms. It's worth $4 million. And it's owned by a Dr. Munir Ueda, who fled the country 11 years ago. His girlfriend got murdered. And I guess police think he did it. And the property was repossessed from Dr. Ueda. And the bank has it now. So in the meantime, the squatters have been throwing parties almost every night. Rave parties. They start at 2 a.m. They run for hours. There's been assaults, fires, arrests. Squatters were advertising rooms on booking.com for $300 a night. And they would charge guests $75 entry fees at the gate, and hundreds of people would show up. This neighborhood is so wealthy. Jeff Bezos, Steve Wynn, and Ron Burkle all have homes within a half mile of this house. And LeBron's house manager had to keep security guards at this house 24/7 because of the squatter parties. A neighbor said the police could not evict the residents. They had driver's licenses using that property address and a fake rental agreement. So even LeBron's out of luck. He can't get the squatters out of the neighborhood. We have Conway and Thompson.
Hey, now. Hey, yeah. Can you imagine telling our grandfathers somebody's in your house, they won't get out? Can you imagine how short that conversation would have been? Like, anybody listening right now, your grandfather was told that there's somebody in your house and you can't get that. And somebody's in his house and you can't get him out. They'd be dead and buried and never seen again.
And then, but what happened is, and this is the new world, they'll get sued for having removed the person who is in the house illegally.
Right. That's exactly right.
It's craziness on craziness.
It's wild. This Friday, there is a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame being dedicated to a friend's dad, a guy named Charlie Fox. You may know him. He wrote that song, Killing Me Softly. Maybe you've heard that.
Wow.
Yes. He also wrote the Laverne and Shirley theme song, sure. Happy Days, Love Boat.
I've always wondered, not that you'd know, like, how much money, if you had a really big hit song, right? Number one, blockbuster of the year. The residuals on that.
Millions.
How much is it?
Well, Killing Me Softly was the number one song played worldwide for 22 straight years.
Is that right?
Yeah. So there was a check coming in every 3 or 4 months for $1 million.
I had a friend.
One song.
My friend who was a composer, and he would do music for cartoons. And TV shows and movies. And he used to call it mailbox money. One of his cartoons got syndicated in like 85 countries. And he'd get royalties from all 85 countries in the mail.
That's the way to go. The mailman becomes your boss.
Yeah.
You know, he brings you your check.
all you have to do is go out to the mailbox every day. That's your day.
Right. And we're not into
that. So is he going to be on with this? I don't understand why you mentioned that.
No, because his star is happening this Friday. So we're going to go into it on the program.
Oh, so we are going to talk about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. We're going
to
talk about
it. We don't have a connect to them to get him on the air?
We do, but I don't want to be a pain in the ass.
A pain in the ass? How many times does he get his star on the walk?
Since when do you don't want to be a pain in the ass? When did this start?
It's my new life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Would you find some kind of religion?
I just don't. I don't want to ask too many favors of too many people, you know. I don't know how to do it. I always feel like I'm asking too much of people.
I asked a guy, but he went the Love Boat theme? Yeah, I mean, that's insane.
That's huge.
No, you should ask him to come on. He's
been on before. I just don't
know. Well, have him on again. Well,
so you're not going to bother him. He's already put up with you before.
How old is he? He's 81, 82.
Even better. He's got less on the schedule.
Look, how old are you, John? You're in your 40s, right? Okay. You still, when somebody says, hey, can you call into a radio show in Cleveland, Ohio? You're like, oh.
Actually, I don't mind that.
Really?
Fun. Yeah.
All right.
I like being on the radio when I don't have to be in charge.
Okay. Will you call in as Charlie Fox then in about an hour? Read up on him, by the way.
Conway thinks that everybody's like him. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He doesn't want to see anybody. He doesn't want to call in.
He doesn't want to leave the house.
He doesn't get it. Other people may want to do it.
That's right. I don't want to do anything. I'm in the majority.
Yeah.
People have had it. People have had.
You identify with all the people laying around now.
Nobody wants to do anything.
The last 4 years doing nothing. Yeah.
Nobody. How about this? My daughter's leaving for school and she can't get out of the driveway because they're filling potholes in Burbank like they do all the time.
Yeah.
And she can't get out. She's a new driver and she's nervous. So I throw on jeans. It's 7 in the morning. A shirt. It's on backwards. My shoes are untied. I get the car and I move it around the truck. My hair's all effed up. And my eyes are swollen from all the pizza I had last night. And I'm walking back in the house, and the guy in the truck who's filling the potholes, he goes, "Hey, ding dong!" it's a true story.
Yeah,
true story.
The ding doesn't wake up till noon.
Yeah, he's out working. He's pulling bottles 7 in the morning.
Right, yeah, he's working his ass off.
Conway, Thompson.
Ding dong.
And Ashley Johnson is live in the KFI 24-hour newsroom.
Hey, you've been listening to the John Cobalt Show podcast. You can always hear the show live on KFI AM 640 from 1 to 4 p.m. every Monday through Friday. And, of course, anytime on demand on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today. Listen to Rappaport's Reality starting May 8th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.